FreaksAuto.com. Get in the game.
Hour two of the game. John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, Grant Flanders filling in today for Mitch Fortner. Coming up hour two of the show, going to hear our conversation from Big 12 Media Days with Sam Mellinger, columnist from the Kansas City Star, here in just a moment. Little People's Court at 525. Tyler has a dilemma. You can vote on which side of the aisle he should be on at the game KMAN right now, and we will get to the results of that poll later on in the hour. To tweet us, it is the game KMAN. You can shoot your questions or comments that way. And a reminder, you can get us on the iTunes podcast app. If you have an iPhone, just go to the podcast app, search the game KMAN. You can find us there. Also, newsradiokman.com and the on-demand tab. We can get to as well an interesting email that we just got, a press release from K-State. Some changes in the way the athletic department is structured. Really the first thing we've heard from Gene Taylor, an announcement from him since he has been the athletic director actually here when he got here in May. But for now, we focus in on Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star. We've had him on the show a number of times. I always really appreciate his insight. We covered a lot of ground with him, including the future of K-State football. But he had, I think, a pretty clever response here when we started off by asking him what his biggest takeaway was from the 2 days in Frisco at Big 12 Media Days.
That the Dallas Cowboys spent $1.5 billion on a practice facility? My God. Only in Dallas, right?
Right.
And I know that includes, like, you know, the hotel and commercial and all that, but which, you know, begs me to say, like, only in Dallas would they have residential, commercial, like, all this development around a practice facility.
Well, this is incredible.
It is nice. And they have high school games here, which I think is really cool if you're a high school kid. Although, if you're a high school kid in Dallas, this is probably like the smallest stadium that you can ever imagine playing in. But this is really nice.
So do you do this in St. Joe first, or do you take care of the new KCI first? If you're in charge,
I have mixed feelings about St. Joe. Actually, on the downside, it is never less than 184 degrees ever in St. Joe during training camp. But it's also drivable. You know what I mean? Like, you can get there and back and you know, be at home for dinner and stuff like that. Or at least I can. If Therese Paylor is listening to this, he's cussing me out as we speak. But, I don't have anything against St. Joe, but it would be nice to have a roof.
Sam Mellinger here with us. You know, it's interesting. I do want to talk some Big 12 football, but actually now that we're going down this road, how weird are things with the Chiefs right now with everything that has happened this offseason?
Anybody that I talk to, who has, you know, like an NFL connection, you know, Gil Brandt, I think, is probably still here. And, you know, just like random text messages and stuff. Like, the first question is always like, hell's going on with the Chiefs? You know, I don't think anybody really knows. And, you know, the Chiefs, they fired John Dorsey, you know, dang near a month ago now. And, you know, not a peep out of them, other than, you know, this sort of canned, vague letter to season ticket holders that Clark wrote. And I know they're going to have a press conference next week, which I think is really awkward. It's the first time the owners are going to talk since firing John Dorsey, and it's also the day that they're introducing the replacement for John Dorsey. That's going to be, like, super awkward, and I think a big PR mistake, you know, by the Chiefs, but that's not my department.
Think we'll ever get concrete answers, really, as to what happened with John Dorsey?
I mean, the one person I think who can say is John, you know, and he just, you know, hasn't. He's been radio silent. You know, I've texted him back or texted him a few times, and, you know, he'll reply just, you know, like, you know, thanks, good to talk, you know, just super vague, not anything about football. And I think that's probably how he's being with a lot of people. And he's the one, you know, because Clark's not going to talk. You know, and, you know, John, you know, would fit the profile of the guy that would, but I don't think it's in him to do it.
Getting to some of the football-related festivities going on down here in Dallas, it's been, for us, a very weird offseason for K-State because it's a program that's so synonymous with not making any headlines off the field, and you have an offseason here that starts with Coach Snyder and his cancer diagnosis. You have the Corey Sutton standoff, and then you have the Scott France news here just a couple weeks ago. For someone that's a little bit outside of Manhattan but still kind of in the K-State bubble, what's your perception of what this offseason has been like for K-State?
Yeah, I mean, it's different, right? And you know, I would say that the Sutton deal was a self-inflicted wound. But the other two, what are you going to do? You know, I mean, things that just happen. And You know, those and I think, again, very self-inflicted wound on the Sutton stuff. But the way that K-State has handled, you know, Bill Snyder's, what do we call it? I mean, just diagnosis and recovery and treatment and all this. I don't know how they could have done it better. And the Scott France thing, you know, same thing. And I don't, maybe I shouldn't say this on a Manhattan radio station, but one of the things I like about the Scott France thing is I don't think that this is a unique K-State thing. You know what I mean? That this kid comes out and his teammates, by all accounts, respect it and we move forward. The reason that I really like the story is that I don't think that's unique to K-State. I think there's a lot of colleges around the country where this would be treated similarly. And I know, I hear, and you guys probably do too, from a lot of people, you know, why is this news? I don't care about it now. And I think, like, that's great, you know? And I don't think it's not necessarily news to me either, but it is to a lot of people. And I think that, you know, we're moving. And Michael Sam was not as smooth as everybody a lot of times likes to point out. But it seems like this has been a little bit smoother than that seemed like. And but we also know, all three of us know with 100% certainty that there are guys in that locker room who aren't entirely comfortable with what Scott said and aren't, you know, entirely comfortable with, you know, that that's who he is. But to me, that the peer pressure is now for those guys to keep quiet and to go along with, you know, the acceptance is really, really significant.
That's a very good point. Sam Ellinger here with us from the Kansas City Star. We do talk about Bill Snyder and his health, and he hates talking about it. But
sure.
As far as the succession plan is concerned, I mean, Sean always comes up. Uh-huh. What is your opinion on where you think K-State should go as far as that is concerned? If it's going to be next year, if it's going to be later on down the road?
Yeah, I mean, Jim Leavitt is the guy that makes the most sense to me. You know, he's done it before, knows the culture. It seems like Jim Leavitt has most of the pluses that Sean would bring, but also experience that Sean doesn't have. And that to me is, and I think he, by all accounts, like, loves the university, would love to, you know, would hitchhike his way to Manhattan to take the job. Excuse me. So that's the way that I would go. But I don't, you know, without knowing really like the inner workings too much of, you know, I've heard some things, and I'm sure you guys have too, of the relationship between Sean and some of the other coaches. And I'd want to have a better feel, though, and this is something Gene Taylor can do, of, you know, how that dynamic would work and how much of that staff Sean could keep. Because it's not, you know, the biggest argument, right, for just sliding Sean in there is stability. But it's not going to be stable if the coaches don't stick around. You know, if he has to hire a whole new staff, it's not going to be that stable. So those are the, some of the things that I'd want to know. But look, man, like it seems like they tried it, and nobody involved in that is still with the university, basically. But they tried it their own way once before,
yeah.
And they got Ron Prince, right? And so there's an argument that, you know, let the guy do it his way this time, and what's the worst that could happen?
We talked earlier about the off-field headlines around this K-State program this offseason, and one that I excluded was the departure of John Curry and
oh, sure,
Gene
right.
Taylor coming in.
Yeah.
What's your perception about the new direction of K-State athletics as a whole, with Gene Taylor being pretty much a complete opposite in terms of personality uh-huh. and everything like that to John Curry?
Yeah, he is the opposite of John in some kind of important ways. I actually like John, and I thought that he did a better job than some people give him credit for in terms of, you know, facilities and a lot of, you know, program infrastructure. I thought he did a good job. There was just what he did a rotten job with is just sort of is a communication or relationships. I mean, just sort of like ingratiating himself as part of the community and the program. And I think his relationship with coaches, I mean, none of this is really new, but, you know, he could have done a much better job with that. Gene Taylor, I have no idea how he's going to do in sort of the 30,000 foot view that I thought John did a good job of fundraising, that kind of thing. But as far as like relationships and dealing with coaches, you know, my view of him, talking to him a few times, is that, you know, aces. You know, and every time I talk to him, I just think, man, that guy should be a Division One athletic director, and if he's going to be a Division One athletic director, Kansas State is exactly the kind of place where that should happen. I mean, he just seems solid. Everything you hear about him is, if he says it, it's true. You can trust it. You know, he'll keep his word. I mean, these are things that I think are vitally important for anybody in that position, but especially in his position at that university at this time, with, you know, some things, and who knows if it's going to happen next week or next year or in 5 years or whatever, but at some point they're going to have to replace the most important coach in Kansas State history, and that's probably underselling it. And Gene Taylor's going to have to be the guy to do that. And he seems equipped. It doesn't seem like that moment will be too big for him.
Tim Ellinger from the Kansas City Star with us here. Before we let you go, as we talk to you right now, Royals have been on a slide since they were red hot before the All-Star break. Can you say anything to, I guess, give us some hope here about the Royals moving forward? Do you think they stay in it as we move through the rest of the season?
The thing that I would say, you know, to give hope is that 3 years ago there was a team that was below 500 that everybody wanted the manager and the GM fired. Everybody wanted the team to sell off pieces at the trade deadline. And that team got red hot, won a wild card game, and came within one swing of winning the World Series. Like, that is a pretty recent and very local example of, you know, what can happen. And I think that this team, I don't think this team is as good as the 2014 team, and I don't think they're not nearly as good as the 2015 team. But they have good players. And, you know, why can't would anybody be surprised if Eric Hosmer hit 310 with, you know, 15 doubles and 15 home runs the rest of the year and carried them for stretches? Would anybody be surprised if Mike Moustakas at this point ends up with somewhere between 40 and 45 home runs and carries the offense for certain times? They're giving Sal Perez more rest than ever before. Would anybody be surprised if that means that he's more productive in the second half than he's been? This is a group, and I know a lot of the faces have changed, but this is a group that over the last 3 or 4 years has really proven to be a second-half team. They've been better in the second half than the first half. I expect their offense to be better, in part because I don't know how it could be much worse. But, you know, there's certain parts here. You know, I think Neftali Feliz has shown, like, some promise of being able to help the bullpen even just a little bit. I think Kelvin Herrera, I know he's given up some home runs and in some bad spots, but if you isolate his numbers in save situations versus non-save situations, his save situations numbers are basically the dominant version of Kelvin Herrera of the last 3 years. So they've got all the pieces. Now, look, I think it's more likely that they miss the playoffs than make it, but it's absolutely realistic that they can get hot. And once you're in, you know, I think, again, 3 years ago, I think we saw that once you're in, you know, anything's possible.
That was pretty good. That got me back on board, man. I was pretty negative after last night. Hey, Sam, really appreciate the time as always, man.
Yeah,
we'll talk
to
you soon, but thanks for doing that. All right, there is Sam Ellinger from the Kansas City Star. Now, to be fair there at the end, when I said that was Tuesday, so it was after the Monday loss, which was pretty bad. The Royals did win last night. Game that encapsulated a lot of their season. We'll get to that at 5:40. But when we come back, going to have to take a case up with the People's Court. I think this ruling should really be pretty easy. Apparently, Twitter does not quite see it that way. This is The Game.